We've been talking about the things people miss about the old analog world. Vinyl records, cassette tapes, anything made of cardboard and paper. Well, writer Virginia Heffernan has her own personal catalog of analog items she misses. She just might be the only person in America nostalgic for landline telephones. But Virginia was also an early convert to digital. She started messing around with computers when she was only 9 years old. They were magic to her then, and they still are. In her new book, Magic and Loss, she calls the internet the great masterpiece of civilization.
Yeah, a radio-ready version of the sort of macro history that sentence, the internet is the great masterpiece of civilization, is that civilization moves from more material to more abstract. So you take the history of, say, finance, beginning with just mined gold to gold ingots to, you know, minted gold ingots with inscription on them to paper with inscription on it, very like a book. Then, you know, it's the letters and the symbols on the dollars that make it meaningful. And then to electronic pulses all the way to Bitcoin, one of the most abstract things there is.
So are you suggesting that historically we're in this continual battle to transcend the physical? Because that seems problematic. We are fundamentally bodies.
Yes. And I think that that is a really interesting and ultimately productive tension in the larger story. But I want to give you another view. So there's a lot of alarmism around, say, girls being harassed and particularly sexually harassed using digital technology. So I read a book about this with lots of interviews with young women, and it was really interesting to see how horrible things happen where their faces are grafted onto naked bodies and the porn is distributed to blackmail them. And, you know, it's really obviously terrible, and I can see it being heartbreaking to the girls. I mean, I've been hazed on Twitter many times, and it does wreck your day, but it doesn't damage your body, right? That's potentially a reform on actual physical rape, disease, teen pregnancy.
Well, I think you've put your finger on this tension, you know, the physical versus the abstract. I guess I think maybe you're talking about death versus immortality. You know,
Yes. We're
creating
a
digital world in which nothing can die. And yes, we can't be hurt physically. Isn't the fact that we're beings that can die somehow at the heart of everything good about us? Do we want to live in an immortal world?
No. I mean, I couldn't. I want to leave that with you. I mean, that was beautifully said. I don't think it's an accident that we've seen the rise of these intensely physical practices, almost comically physical practices, you know, almost kind of kindergarten return to let's pay attention to the food we eat, or CrossFit. Just almost brutal, where you're expected to vomit during much of the exercise. That might not be the expectation now that it's become more popular, but I know in the beginning they courted this feeling of misery at the end of their routines.
But, I mean, you're saying this is basically in response to our increasingly abstracted digital life. We're craving the physical.
Yes. And, you know, not everything that's great about humans exists in the body. There are also enormous mental and emotional pleasures to be enjoyed in symbols and language and images. You know, I'll give you another example where in Japan, so here we have endless hand-wringing conferences on what to do with our children and the internet and books about it. In Japan, it's the reverse. Kan Ishao is a sociologist there, and he's written many books about how it's been a godsend in Japan to have digital culture because people are so straitened by name, rank, and serial number in physical life, in the walking down the street life, in the subway life, and then, of course, in the lives of salarymen and women, that they got the internet, and all of a sudden they can be shape-shifting. They can have different names. They can write differently. They can enter different worlds, test out different ideologies and different romantic experiences. And what's wrong with the side of us that wants to take beautiful pictures and put them on Instagram? That's not a corrupt, twisted, horrible, overly civilized part of our nature. That's baseline artistic expression.
One of the things I really liked about reading your book is the sense of wonder you brought to the internet and to digital culture, and it kind of restored it for me, because I guess you spent a lot of time reading people talking about the internet as toxic or poisonous in some way or another, and talking a lot about what we've lost. There are a few moments in your book when you were talking about how many people are online at any one time, or how many people, what did you say, that the number of cell phones and the number of people on the planet is approximately the same by
They're
now?
They're almost at par. Cell phone subscriptions. Yeah, that's right. You know, the first screen I ever looked at, that screen had the black background and the green phosphorus letters in the front. I spent so long just trying, almost semi-consciously, unconsciously, trying to fathom what was back there, you know? It's very interesting that that interface looked so much like the night sky. You know, something bright and legible and symbolic to make sense of, you know, with constellations and use that left part of your brain in the front. And then this infinite regress yonder back there in the darkness.
I'd forgotten that. There was something beautiful about that, as though the letters and the meaning was kind of, appearing in front of you out of this darkness.
Yeah. You know, like the beginning of Star Wars, like the letters are somehow on space. And it's sort of, you know, the greatest sublimity of nature, that dark night sky, and the sublimity of mankind, which to me is humankind, which is the invention of language, in this amazing juxtaposition. And finally, when I understood the internet, that early conference XYZ that I joined had at most 100 members. So it wasn't a huge number of people, but it was still a lot of consciousnesses to have appear in some way in your, you know, corner of your parents' bedroom where you were curled up at, you know, with this computer. When it became, you know, 100 million and then a billion and then 2 billion, and now more than that, my little brain is not enough. It doesn't compute that. It doesn't make sense of that there are somewhere 2 billion minds are potentially available to me on my phone, you know? are with me. And the fact of humanity, I think Marilynne Robinson says this too, just sort of, there's a religion itself, I mean, that used to just be called humanism, that is founded in this awe with the human mind and just the enormity of our collective experience.
But do you ever feel like, I can't sit in front of a screen anymore. I can't be in that digital space. I need a break. I need to just be with physical things for a while.
Yes. I just heard a wonderful, wonderful lecture by Marina Warner on the importance of hairiness, that our devices are so hairless. And she calls it glabrous, which I guess is a word from art history, smooth and, you know, like marble. And that, you know, aspiring to the glabrousness of a screen is, as you say, a way to dampen what's best about us, which is that we're living and dying at the same time. And so is much of the material world. You know, Johnny Ive, the designer at Apple, my friend Paul Ford says, like, he loathes us. He just thinks humans are disgusting, you know? The iPhone is meant to be oleophobic, meaning it refuses oil, you know? And in addition to blood and hair and, you know, our oils are one of the best things about us, the oil in our skin. And, you know, it's just constantly the digital culture tells us there's something disgusting about us, and it's just enough.
As you're listening to the following music selections, adjust the volume, bass, and treble controls to suit your tastes.
Virginia Heffernan is the author of Magic and Loss: The Internet as Art.